Hey, Pippin, we're broadcasting from the Flamingo Hotel and Casino in Laughlin, Nevada. UFO Congress underway, and we have movie producer, writer extraordinaire, TV documentarian, Robert D. Miles, and all-around good fellow. How are you, Robert?
I'm doing great, Jerry. Yeah, thank you.
I don't even know where to start. First of all, I guess we better start about your book, because this is a great read. It's a science fiction book called Safe Space. I had a guy walk up to me earlier. You were busy taping interviews yourself for your documentary, which you're putting together, which we'll get into in a minute. But he wanted to buy the book, and I said, well, I'm sure he'd probably sell it to you, but I need it for the interview.
That's great. They're available on Amazon.com and on the website, SafeSpaceProject.com. But, you know, thank you for the compliment. And we kind of like the cover. We like the idea of how it looks and the reaction that it's getting out there from people that are reading it.
It's kind of a cross between a modern airline, a hydroplane, and a UFO flying triangle.
Right. We're looking what Jerry's looking at there is actually a ship. It's called the Safe Space One, and it's kind of one of the center pins of the story in that in the story, an extraterrestrial comes to Earth, and he gathers together a team of people from all over the world, and they build this amazing vessel, the Safe Space One, which is actually designed for the water. And then they travel around the world as an example of peace and sanity. And, you know, it's a story that has its roots in the actual construction of the ship, we hope, and the actual doing it actually for real out there with a real Safe Space team and real people who help make a difference.
So you'd like to put a group together like this?
Absolutely. And we're in the process of it now. We've got team members all over the world.
Do you have information on your website about that?
You bet we do, and that's SafeSpaceProject.com.
You build, you're living in Sholo, Arizona, but you build ships, or have.
That's correct. I built four sailing
looking at
ships.
Your resume, see, I know a little bit about you there. But you weren't in Sholo when you built those ships.
That's true. Actually, the start of the whole thing and the start of the story came as a result of building a ship, which I built in Portland, Oregon, back in the late 60s, and then actually sailed from Portland, Oregon to Hawaii. And then lived in Hawaii.
How big of a crew did you have?
We had a crew of 11 on that vessel. And
so I had to call you captain.
Yeah, that's true. I was a captain. I've been a captain, and I hope to be a captain again in the future.
Of this craft.
Well, of that craft, but something a little larger. In the book, we talk about the Starship Titha, which is actually a 3-mile-long spacecraft that comes to this particular solar system on a mission originally intended to destroy the planet, sent by the Federation. But I'd like to be a captain of a starship, Jerry. How about you? I think you're an old starship commander yourself.
Well, I must have been in a previous life. No, it is exciting, the whole concept. We're going to get into your story about this in a minute, but before we do, I want to talk about why you're doing this documentary and what your concept is here. I noticed one thing. You're a TV guy. You walk up to people. They talk to you. We're a similar business, but I'm a radio guy. And I get some people to come on that won't go with you because TV's got a bad reputation, evidently.
Yeah,
in this community of UFOs.
Yeah, it sure does.
And you have to explain to them that you're not going to assassinate them right on camera.
Yes, we have to also explain we're an independent production company, and we're independent producers, and that we're trying to present a positive piece, and the one that's filled with facts and information that hasn't gotten out there.
Now you have a unique marketing plan for this DVD, right?
Yeah, we sure do. We intend that hopefully this will be just the first of what would be going on as a ongoing series of what we call intelligence briefings. And we call it the Safe Space Intelligence Briefing. The first one's going to be called the Fastwalker Files. And Fastwalker is a term that NORAD uses to refer to, as you know, UFOs and unidentified flying objects. And they get a lot of those.
Yes, they
get a lot of those reports, don't they?
Yes, they do. You've had some pretty interesting people here. Have you learned anything in your week here? I'm sure you have. I always do.
We've had a wonderful week. We've interviewed fantastic people. We've got the speakers that have come to this 14th annual conference, our wonderful speakers from all over the world. It's been a delight, and you know, my mind is just expanding. And that's the one thing about life, is you get a lot of expansion, don't you?
Yeah, you do. Now, you've talked to some pretty interesting people. One of our favorite people, a fellow Arizonan, Robert Dean.
You bet.
And he has a great story to tell.
Great story.
And he does it with authority and quite an experience.
Well, one of the things I noticed about Command Sergeant Robert Dean is with his story, not only was it with authority, but it was with heart.
Yes, no doubt about it.
Here's a man that loves life, and he loves people. He loves this planet and this earth, and he's got a great story to tell.
He's kind of an example, I think, of what I've noticed on my years of UFO and paranormal shows. When you have encounters like this, it's a life-changing experience. These people, for lack of a better term, they begin to think of the world as one and feeling good. And like you were talking about, building this craft here in your book.
You bet. And not only did we interview Robert Dean, we also had the good fortune to interview Wendell Stevens.
Another Arizonan who, Wendell, you know, I don't know how many UFO crashes he talked to you about, but he's named about 10 of them that happened in New Mexico alone to me.
Well, it's certainly no secret that when you start talking to Wendell, you start finding out secrets. And that's a man that can expand your awareness about what's really going on out there.
I don't know if he got into the carryall story with you about the ETs going in the carryall from Sandia Base into Area 51 by car.
Missed that one.
Yeah, it was a great story. Great story from the,
one, yeah.
from the early 60s.
You
and. Wendell's quite a guy, quite a guy. And speaking of quite a guy, one of the people, one of my favorite people here is Jim Mars.
Oh, Jim's great.
And Jim always has some incredible things to say, and a great researcher, by the way, and a great investigative reporter.
Absolutely. And Jim, in his interview with us, he told us about Redgate, and he told us a lot about his investigation in the alien agenda, the books that he's done, and you know, it's fascinating, and what an investigator.
Oh, what a technique. Incredible. He's one of my favorite people.
Yeah, what a technique he has for actually doing the investigation. I mean, not only does he hear the story, he researches it at every level.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I really like, and I miss doing as much as I'd like to do, because I have to host a show all the time. But getting out there and really researching personally and digging behind the stories, Jim is an expert at that.
Yeah, well, so are you. I know you're going out on another expedition.
Yes, sir.
Not too many days tomorrow. Well, Sunday night, you're going to be doing it again, right?
Right. Well, the Phoenix Lights celebration is going on. We're going to be talking to Bill Hamilton tomorrow, who's making a special trip down here to be on the show. And he wrote a book about the Phoenix Lights. He's basically an expert on Area 51.
Wow.
But and I'll introduce you to him. Maybe you can get him on.
Hey,
what are you going to do with all of this now? I mean, you've shot miles of tape here.
Right, and we're just getting started. We've got a team not only here in the United States, but we've got a team in Europe as well. And we've met people here from Mexico, Costa Rica, UFO researchers, people that do television shows. We're talking to people from Argentina, all over the world, and even Turkey.
We have a member of our staff from Turkey.
Absolutely.
Now, you know, there's lots of sightings in Turkey and areas like that that most of us don't hear about, even though India and China are making headlines these days with their stories seem to be coming to the forefront. Another fellow here, AJ, who has UFO Magazine down in Brazil, he thinks Brazil is going to come up with some disclosure information by the end of March.
Wow, that's exciting.
So, and I do think if anything breaks, if there's a crack in the armor, it's not going to come from here. I think they pretty well got it locked down, unfortunately, in the United States. But I think it'll be one of these other countries.
I think you're absolutely right, but we're going to push them to the limit. We were talking with Steve Bassett, and he
another one of my favorite people.
he intends to push it to the limit at the X conference, and we want to be there for that and support him 100%.
I don't know if you could get a hold of one of the tapes. Stephen may have it. They had a TV debate when he ran for Congress in Maryland, ran as an independent candidate. Mm-hmm. And he knew he wouldn't win, but it was their whole idea was to get in, force them to have a TV debate with him as the independent candidate, and he brought up the UFO subject right off the bat.
Super.
And you should see the other expressions of the other mainstream candidates.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
That's a subject, that's kind of a hot potato.
Yes, it is.
But what we want to do is we want to acquire as much evidence as possible, and we invite people from all over the world to send in their videotapes and to send in their pictures, and we want to work with you and your website, because I know you've got millions of hits coming in.
Yeah,
and what a wonderful job you've been doing.
Well, thank you very much. We're going to, of course, along with this interview, we do have an email address and a link to you.
Sure.
And maybe you'll get some good leads. We get incredible things by email. You know, there's something about email that lets people really get intimate with you.
Oh, you bet.
Yeah, that they wouldn't normally talk about otherwise.
Yeah, it's like in the old days when you used to write people letters, you know, and you used to have pen pals. Well, now
yes.
We got millions of pen pals out there.
Right.
This whole UFO subject, I heard an interesting statistic, and you probably already know it, but I didn't, that the whole UFO industry in the area of the internet has more downloads than any other subject except one.
And so, what is that? Oh, well, you know what it is.
We know
it's
what
a three-letter word that starts with S.
Absolutely.
And ends with X.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I met some pretty sexy people at UFO conferences, but that's another subject. I don't want to get into that right now.
Right.
Let's talk about this. When's this going to come out?
Well, right now we're in the data gathering and what we call a production phase, which means we're out there shooting it. As you know, we're gathering the information and we're also developing the script somewhat flexible as we go, because we want to present a really wonderful, positive story that is worldwide. We want to be able to present the truth, the facts, the evidence, and at the same time, we also want the emotional story. So we want to produce a documentary that isn't just aimed at the existing UFO Congress crowd. We want to go for the general public, and we feel that the general public out there is ready for this kind of information.
Do you have a timetable in mind when this might be ready?
Well, we're hoping less than 6 months.
Okay.
But, you know, we could rush it to judgment, but I think we want to give it some time, and we want to gather the material. As we leave this Congress, we're actually leaving the Congress with enough footage to do a number
of shows.
Of shows. And so we're tempted, of course, to put out some of that information, possibly in some form.
Well, you let us know, and then we'll let the people know when something's available.
I will.
I want to talk about your experiences here.
Okay.
Some interesting things have happened to you in your life in this field.
Yeah,
why don't you get into a little bit of that with me?
Sure, I'll be happy to, Jerry. And I just want to say to all your listeners out there that what a great job you do in actually putting the stories out. And that's how I first heard you and how I first discovered you, is someone told me to be sure and listen to an interview of somebody that you actually had on your website.
Uh-huh.
And ever since then, I've been a real advocate of what you're doing. But the reason we're doing the documentary and the reason we're involved in this is really because in 1971, I had a personal experience that totally and completely changed my life.
Yes, and, as I mentioned earlier, it's always a life-changing experience.
And I had built a boat in Portland, Oregon, and it was a trimaran, a three-hull sailing ship, which is kind of unusual back in those days. In about 1968, we completed the boat, and then we actually sailed, and when I say we, I had a couple of partners, and decided we were going to take a great adventure. And so we didn't know how to navigate, and we didn't know how to sail, but we built the boat, and we went down the Columbia River, turned left at the mouth of the ocean, and we headed down the coast of California. And we had a lot of terrific sailing experiences, but once we left San Diego, we sailed to Hawaii, which took 24 days. And when we got there, we were in the islands for about 2.5 years. We had a great time. You know, we had the experience of living aboard, but we had set a dream of sailing around the world. But in the period of 2.5 years, I decided that it really wasn't what I wanted to do, and that I wanted to discover who I was and what was going on, and we decided we'd sell the boat. So we had sold the boat, and the guy was coming for delivery. I had set my alarm clock for about 4:30 in the morning. The sun was coming up early in those days, and I had this beautiful skylight right above my bunk. And so I got up, I put on the coffee pot, and got a cup of coffee, went back to my bunk. I got dressed, and I just lay in there in my bunk waiting for the time when everybody else would get up. I'm an early riser. And the next thing I knew, the most incredible surge of energy began to run through my body. And then the whole area in my stateroom seemed to like tingle and sparkle, and a beautiful woman materialized standing right next to me. I was laying on my bunk and she was standing next to me in the companionway. And I was absolutely astounded. And this feeling, this tingling, was like something I had never experienced before. And the only thing I could compare it to is, like, we all know what 110 electricity feels like.
Yes.
When you stick your finger in
the socket. Yeah, right, right.
Well, this was like 440. And wow. Only it was tremendous. It didn't hurt. It was the most wonderful feeling I have ever experienced in my life.
Exhilarating.
Exhilarating, yeah. And at the same time, ecstatic. It was really a feeling of complete ecstasy. And I looked at her and I said, I can't believe it. I must be dreaming. And she said, no, you're not dreaming. And I said, but you can't be real. This just doesn't happen. And I said, you can't be real. She says, I am. She said, touch me. And so I reached out and I touched her. And she felt real, Jerry. And I said, now, you know, what's going on? And she said, well, myself and my friends want you to go somewhere and to hear something. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, would you be willing to take a trip with me to meet some people and to experience something that will totally change your life? And I said, yahoo, let's go.
Yeah, right.
And she told me to close my eyes, and in the next instant I did. I was teleported to New York City, to LaGuardia Airport.
About 5,000 miles away.
Yeah, from San Diego to LaGuardia,
yeah, right. Okay.
Instantaneously.
Okay.
And she had told me that when I got there, I was to get a ticket on the Jupiter trip. And I said, now, you know, going back just a little bit, I said, this is impossible. And she said, no, it's not. So when I got to LaGuardia, here I am standing in the middle of LaGuardia Airport. She said to go up the counter, ask for a ticket on the Jupiter trip.
Okay.
And that I wouldn't need any money.
See,
everything was
a beautiful
free,
woman can get
thing.
You to do anything,
now, can
right?
you believe this?
Okay. There,
so I went up to the window. I got a I said, I'd like a ticket for the Jupiter trip. Person didn't even crack a smile. And I got a ticket for the Jupiter trip. I went over, got in the elevator, and actually boarded the elevator, went up to the upper level, and I boarded a spacecraft. Now, at the time, I didn't realize it was a spacecraft. What I thought was, it was like a large circular area, very plush, and I was met there by, like, a flight attendant.
Mm-hmm.
They had me take a seat, and she said, we'll be taking off in just a few minutes. Within about, 4 or 5 minutes, the next thing I knew, a couple of other people boarded, sat there, and I'm saying to myself, this can't be happening.
Yeah.
This is a dream.
Uh-huh.
The next thing I knew, I looked out through the porthole, and I could see the Earth as we zoomed away from it, and I don't have any idea what speed. And within a few minutes, what seemed like a few minutes, maybe a passage of time, and maybe 15, 20 minutes mm-hmm. that I was aboard, and there were other people there.
You're
I didn't
Jupiter?
Talk to anybody. I was actually on the planet Jupiter. I disembarked from the spacecraft,
uh-huh.
walked down the ramp, and I was met there by her, and she had not accompanied me on the spacecraft. I look back around and I see this beautiful saucer sitting there, probably 150 feet in diameter, you know, and people say, well, what does it look like? And I say, well, it looks like a flying saucer. It looks like the ones that, you know, you used to see. Beautiful, metallic looking. I was met there by a group of people and taken to a briefing and spent about a day, what seemed like to be a day or 8 or 10 hours, during which time I was giving information like by like a holographic type information, where I saw what was going to happen to the planet in the future unless we worked together and made changes. And I met, there were about 50 other people in the briefing besides myself. I was told that I would be instrumental in forming a team of people that would bring about peace and harmony and change upon the planet. And I agreed to that. Now, I wish there'd been a lot of times in my life I wish I hadn't.
Agreed to that, right.
But I actually agreed that I would come back and begin to do that. And
did you get a sense that the other 49 people or so in the room were from your time?
I got a sense that in addition to what I would call the instructors, uh-huh, or the people that were presenting to Congress, I had a feeling they were from all over the world.
Okay.
And I later, after that briefing was over, we actually went out to the beach, and Jupiter was the most beautiful planet you can imagine. The whole atmosphere was one of color and light and radiant energy. And from the time I actually stepped off that spacecraft back into their presence, that same energy harmonic, that vibratory rate, had totally changed my body. And it was like my feet weren't even touching the ground. It was the most incredible, wonderful sensation I've ever experienced. Make a long story short, within a short time we went out to the beach. The ocean out there was like a silver liquid. It wasn't water. It was more like a metallic liquid, the most beautiful aurora borealis of color. And again, I said, you know, nobody's ever going to believe this. This can't possibly be happening. It has to be a dream. And she said, well, it's not a dream, but you can believe anything you want to. And then I said, well, I guess I'm prepared.
I'm interested in the seashore or whatever you're talking about.
The beach was much like a beach, but the actual liquid was more like a metallic aspect to it, Jerry. It was silver, and
Did it have waves?
Yeah, there was a slight wave pattern to it, but it wasn't, it wasn't like some people have suggested it might have been mercury, you know, but it wasn't mercury because there were people playing it, but it was just like a whole different consistency. And then she said, you need to get back to your boat because there's somebody that wants you. And I said, oh no, how do I do that? And she said, well, just decide you're there. I said, I can't do that. She said, yes, you can.
Yeah.
I'll help you. And so I decided I was there. Within an instant, I was back.
And the guy there to buy the boat was there?
The guy, my partner, was there, and he was hollering for me. And that, needless to say, that experience changed my life. And for months afterwards, I never even felt like I was walking on the ground. My whole energy field was totally and completely changed and different.
So you sold that boat that day.
Yep.
And where did you go?
Well, I began to research a little bit about who I was and what I was doing on the planet anyway.
So you were doing an internal journey, lack of a better term.
That's right. And also I wrote down a little bit about what I had experienced in the manuscript form. And I actually ended up selling that to Columbia Pictures. And then spent 2 years working with Columbia Pictures, with Michael Greskoff, with Douglas Trumbull, the 2001,
and
also
name.
Encounter of the Third Kind. Worked with the directors. There were 6 different scripts produced, but there was never a final draft that was acceptable to take into the next stage of production. So the movie kind of fell out of sync, and that was before Star Wars.
But was it a similar movie to Star Wars?
Well, when you read my book, there's similar aspects, and I'm not going to say that Hollywood shares ideas, but my script traveled around a lot.
Yeah, we understand the business.
Yeah, my script traveled around a lot.
We in entertainment are supposed to be the creative end, but it's really the copycat end, I think. First thing anybody asks you is say, well, where have you done this before? You know what
you,
I mean?
That's you
what
bet.
They kind of want to know.
So over the years, the idea of understanding who I am and trying to help what's happening on this planet, that's been my goal and my ambition.
Right. You know, when you... That was 71, this 2005.
Right,
long journey.
Yep, absolutely.
So what happened to Robert Miles in between there?
Well, Robert Miles did a lot of things. He built four more boats and sailed around a lot, raised a family, ended up getting into television production business, television commercials, public relations, writing, was a newspaper correspondent. Did a lot of different things. Ultimately, about a year and a half ago, I decided it was time to publish the book in a book form. So I sat down and I wrote Safe Space, the book. And as a result of writing the book and taking it out and beginning to do some press on it, ended up doing some radio shows. People started contacting me from around the world.
Yes.
Bruce Jessup in Germany, a dear friend, Stoyan. An ex-MiG pilot from Bulgaria, people from all over the world. We have dreams of putting together a network of people that can share ideas and help one another. And our documentary and, of course, the website is all a part of that.
Now, the documentary, you probably will be about 6 months before you turn it around. Maybe you might get out something a little earlier because you're shooting a heck of a lot of stuff.
You bet we are. We could put a product out in 30 days if we wanted to just put out a product that had speakers speaking on it about some very timely and important things. So, you know, we're sitting right now in our discussion saying, wow, we've got some great stuff here. What should we do with it? Shall we wait and just have a 2-minute clip or 3 minutes of the 45 or 60 minutes we've been going to shot. So people should watch your website. They should watch our website.
We'll keep everybody informed. I want to know what happened to the girl from Jupiter.
You know, I think that not only the girl from Jupiter, but the guys from Jupiter, there's a lot of them out there.
You
do. And I think they walk among us. And the people always ask me, well, what did they look like? And I said, they look like us.
Well, you told me she was beautiful.
You bet. They look like us. And people also say, well, were you abducted? And I said, no, I went willingly.
Yeah, right.
You didn't have to
abduct me. When you have a woman appear in your cabin at 4:30 in the morning and say, you can touch me, I'd follow too. And you followed her all the way to Jupiter.
Absolutely. I haven't given up yet. But, you know, one thing I know about those beings, if you want to call them beings or you want to call them angels or you want to call them extraterrestrials or aliens, is that their intentions were honorable and are honorable, and they want to help, and they want us to make the transition. And I'm not saying that there aren't aliens out there that have ulterior motives and other agendas, but the people that I met and the wonderful beings want to help mankind, and it was a very pleasant experience.
Now, when you first had this first encounter, have you had others since then?
Yes, I have. And I might mention that I do recall that as a young child, about 6 or 7 years old, I lived in a logging camp up in Oregon. And I do recall an instant of when I met, I was actually out camping with a Boy Scout friends of mine, and we actually ran into what I would consider to be a bubble. And I don't have a lot of memories of that. And other people have said that I've talked to, they said usually there's a history of more than one contact.
Yes, yes, sir.
So that was an earlier contact.
And this bubble, was it on the ground?
Yeah, it was on the ground.
Anybody inside there?
Yes, there was. It was a very tall, blonde gentleman and a lady. And they invited me to come into that spacecraft. Now, I've never had regression. And it's interesting.
So you don't know if you went in or not?
I know I went in.
Oh, do you?
I know I went in, but I don't know, you know, I don't have any memory of what happened, you know, prior to that. Going in and then afterwards and coming out. But I do know they were very tall, Nordic looking. and the spacecraft was more like a bubble and very silvery as well, sitting on the ground in Oregon. But then following that, about after writing the book, I have had an instance where I actually observed two spacecrafts in the area of Surprise, Arizona.
Okay.
Which is actually
that's
near
fitting,
Phoenix.
By that's, the way, Robert. Yeah.
that's a surprise.
Yeah.
And it was in a situation where there were other people with me, and we were actually doing an energy circle. But the problem is that it happened to me, and I had the experience, but other people in that energy circle did not have the experience at the same time. And I actually saw the UFOs, I actually saw the, felt the energy, and part of this whole thing, and people have asked me, you know, what do they look like, and that, but what I like to say is, well, you could tell them by their energy field. They have a resident energy that's so much higher.
Are you saying they glowed, or are you saying you just felt them?
You can feel the energy. It's okay. Not a question
okay.
of...
They get in your charisma to the fullest extent.
Right, and you know how in the ancient drawings and things, they used to do the renditions of Christ and of the different angels.
Yes,
they always had that aura in that field. I think that was a symbolic way of showing what that energy actually felt like if you were there. And it's magnificent. It's quite a feeling, and I can only say that I hope it continues, and that I have the experience again.
Anything recently happening to you since you started planning this? Have you been getting any messages or anything about how you're going to put your DVD together?
Well, sometimes you get messages, and then maybe you don't know for sure if the message is the message or if you're, you know,
you're thinking or whatever.
Yeah, whatever. So. I realized a long time ago, because I've tried very hard to put some things together in the past with groups of people who come together, and you realize that there's also a real world that we're dealing in.
Yes.
And no matter how much we think we have assistance and power, you got to be practical about
That's
these
true.
Things too.
Well, in closing, you going to write any more books?
Oh, I'm sure we'll have another book. We've got a screenplay called The Fast Walker Files that's fictional movie with the characters and storyline. And, of course, we want to...
If anybody buy that, let me know, and you've got a part in there for an old man that does interviews.
Oh, absolutely. Well, hey, we got a part for you on the Safe Space team, Jerry. You're written in the book already.
Okay,
you didn't
good.
Even know
good.
It.
Okay, good.
Hey, I think you got a great show, and I want to thank you for having me as a guest.
Well, it's been a pleasure. It's been a fast hour, and we've really enjoyed it. And.
Yeah.
I love the Jupiter story, and I hate to call it a story because
yeah,
it's the Jupiter Files, I guess.
Jupiter trip, that's for sure.
Now, one thing about that trip to Jupiter, you're talking about the atmosphere.
Uh-huh.
It was somewhat gaseous, I guess, or colorish, color-like.
Yeah, gaseous it was not. It was just absolutely the most rarefied air I have ever
breathed. Really? But it was not the right color.
But the color were purple and violets and oranges and blues, the most spectacular. If you can imagine heaven, that's what a heaven would be like. You know, there wasn't a lot of music, so nobody was playing a harp.
There weren't any chewing gum wrappers on the sidewalks.
I didn't notice that. But actually, you know, people have asked me, well, why didn't you ask them a lot more questions? And I said, because I was listening. I was learning.
What kind of construction did they have in the building?
They were white buildings. They looked like they were made of a plasticized material, maybe concrete,
mm-hmm.
but plasticized, something ultra-modern, but also simple. You know, they blended perfectly with the environment. But one of the most beautiful things of all was that spacecraft and the feeling of that energy. I wish everybody could just experience for a moment or two that feeling of energy, because if they would, that would end war. I mean, because you couldn't feel that way about the world and about other people and turn around and drop bombs on them or kill their kids or, you know, do the kind of things that happen, unfortunately, at this time on this planet.
Yeah. Now, what do you think? Any hope for us? There must be, or they wouldn't be wasting their time, would they?
Absolutely hope. Okay. That's the great part of the story, is that we can work together, and if we can have models, if we can create the safe space projects, if we can have the island communities, if we can have the ships, and if we can go out there and we can work as a team together, then the planet will be a different kind of a place. You know, it'll be a Garden of Eden, Jerry, which you and I both know that's possible, right? Or we wouldn't be doing this.
That's right. Well, as a communication, yeah, is very important.
You bet.
And I'm not patting either one of us on the back because we chose this field.
Sure.
But it's very, very important, and it's important to me, and I know it is to you from the week I've spent with you, to get the story right. And there's always a few things coming up that you don't know quite sure what the story is yet, but we're going to get it.
Yeah, and we learn more about it every day. And I want to thank you and your great team for having me on the show, and also for the wonderful people that we've met here, and a lot of them you've introduced us to. And I want to thank you for that. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Robert Miles. This is Jerry Pippin. We're broadcasting from Laughlin, Nevada at the Flamingo Hotel. And it's been a great show, Robert. And the name of the book, one more time, go ahead and plug it. I'm going to make you plug your own book here.
Well, the name of the book is Safe Space, just like it sounds, S-A-F-E-S-P-A-C-E. And the website is safespaceproject.com.
And we have a link to buy the book, a link to his website. And we will keep apprised of when the documentary comes by. Do you have a name for this group of documentaries?
All right, it's the first one. Yeah, they're called the Safe Space Intelligence Briefings, because there's going to be a series of them. And the first one's called the Fast Walker Files.
Fast Walker Files.
Keep your
ears and eyes open for that, everyone.
You bet. Yeah,
we've enjoyed it. Farah Yadozi from Turkey's here with us, and Roberta Scott producing, and I'm Jerry Pippin. Until next time, cheers.